Blog Talk Radio.
Alright, so the world didn't end last week, and we're back. This is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron.
Yo, with the Tornado, Tony Pentecal.
And we've got a very exciting Fight News Unlimited Combat sports show coming your way. I'm sure Tom will pop in any minute here. I have a little bit of a surprise for next week's show that I will share with you a little bit later on. But we definitely have a lot to talk about. We have a couple MMA prospects coming on tonight, Bradley and Taylor Nicholson. And they're going to give us a rundown of how they got into MMA, what made them decide to pursue that sport, and what their goals are there. And it's always nice to talk to the guys that don't have a name for themselves yet and are trying to, get some recognition and, just make their way in the sport rather than, the superstars and stuff that we occasionally get.
I said a couple of years ago when we were first embarking, I think you did the show about a year before I came on board. So I know I was a guest a couple times in 2007 before joining full-time in January of 2008 and coming up on my five-year anniversary. I haven't missed a show yet. But I remember the one thing I always said was the guys that we were always able to get were either the guys that were up and coming and wanted to get their name out there. So we had obviously any amateur I think would be able to quickly grade a show. Because they wanted to get their names out there, or any new professional, somebody just breaking into the pro ranks. We had a few guys like that on. Or we were getting a lot of the times the guys that had been big-time superstars and were either, at the very tail end of their careers or weren't fighting much anymore. And a couple names pop right into my head when I think of that. We had Hammer and Hank Lundy, who's fighting for a world title in less than a month. We had him on the show, and when he was still fighting six-rounders, now he's going for a world title next month. And then it turned around, we had guys like Rick Bell, we had guys like Roy Jones, Wayne Mercer, Vinny Paz, Ken Shamrock, guys that were legitimately huge names, world titleists, pay-per-view headliners, and now either they were retired or nearing the end of their careers, and it was just a chance for them to, get back on there and, talk about, their past experiences and what made them great and, why, we still want to talk to guys like this, because there's a reason, these guys were so great. And for me, I love it because I'm a historian. And to talk about some of, guys maybe that aren't fighting anymore or are past their primes, these guys gave us a lot of great memories over the years and definitely need to be, you want to talk to them just to learn, what it was like to be at that pinnacle.
Right. Well, we do have Tom with us. Welcome, Tom. I'm glad to
see you. Good evening, gentlemen. Good evening.
Good to see you survive the end of the world.
Yeah, just barely. Got a bit of laryngitis, but bear with me.
Oh. Well, I got into the...
I hope I didn't give you my sickness over the airwaves.
I don't think so. I think it was just yelling too much last Saturday afternoon, but we'll talk about that later.
That's all right. A couple of years ago, when I first started doing the show with Rich, I caught a case of bronchitis that was complete hell, where I couldn't even breathe. And I was sitting downstairs at 7:45, and I'm waiting for the call. And I was like, I got to go upstairs and sit in the office to do the show. I contemplated for 14 minutes the fact that I had to walk up a flight of steps.
Wow.
And I'm on the show, and every two words, I'm, he said, Jesus Christ, are you going to be able to get to the show without croaking on me? I'm like, hope so.
Yeah.
We ended up having to cut that one early because I couldn't talk.
Well, speaking of croaking, I almost got killed this weekend, as Tony knows from...
I saw your pictures, Rich. I saw you had a little lump on your head.
Yeah. Well, I think if you guys had seen it, you would have been mighty proud of me because not only did I not get a single bruise or scrape from the other guy, but I restrained myself pretty well, you know, for somebody who's heavier and better at fighting than his opponent, and gets the opportunity to kick somebody's ass who's asking for it. And I just pretty much wrestled at first, and during the wrestling, this kid just wasn't giving up, and I held him down for as long as I could, and then he finally got up. Had my jacket over my head at one point, so I scratched up my back more than anything, rolling around and going up against trees and stuff. And then I ended up hitting my head on a rock while I was throwing him around. And it reminded me of taking a hook in a boxing match, because it was like, you know, you don't quite see stars, but you see like a flash, like a camera bulb when you take a punch, and then it kind of goes away. So I knew I got hit from that, but nothing else hit me. And then I ended up hitting him with a rear naked choke, sunk that in wicked tight, and he quit once, and I kept it on for about 2 seconds, and he quit again. So I definitely let it go then. And I went up to the house, and I checked in the mirror. I said, oh, I'm bleeding all over the place. What the hell, you know? So I went back down there to confront him again, and I just grabbed him by the shirt, took him down to the ground, and there was a big fire right next to us, too, because that's what we were hanging out at the house here for. We were having drinking and, you know, standing by the fire. And fittingly enough, it was actually what we were drinking was called grapple cider.
Well, Rich, what in the world set this thing off? I mean, what? Give us a little background here.
Well, this is a kid that I actually had on my boxing team back in Norwich, when I was at Norwich. And he's been a good friend for years and years and years, but he is a complete alcoholic. I mean, he drinks beer by the 24 ounce and literally like 3, 4, 5 beers a night on the way from, you know, first beer he cracks at work, at the end of work, till when he's driving home, he's drinking.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had some issues with him before. I went into business with him. I started this business with the firewood, and he was working with me. He's got chainsaws and stuff like that. He got some of the equipment of his own, but we made the mistake, I guess, now looking back, of putting each of our money into the main piece of equipment, which is the wood splitter. I put more in than he did, but on two other separate occasions when we got into an argument, he would take the splitter that I owned 90% of and wouldn't return it until I made sure that he was back at work. So it's just been a real aggravating situation with somebody that I've tried to have a lot of patience with. And on this day, I had spent the whole day with another employee cutting trees down, getting the wood order ready. And he shows up, works for about an hour, and leaves for the whole day, never told me he was going to do this, comes back with his girlfriend, and then starts hauling the wood down the hill after I had already taken the entire amount of wood for the delivery we had to do that night down from the site my guy was cutting at. And so he's just bringing more down for the next delivery. But he only was there for another maybe hour. And the stuff that he did when he was there in the first place was stuff that was already cut. All he did was put it on the splitter, and it was pine, real light stuff. Anyway, long story short, he didn't really do a lot of work that day. So we were talking about, the business and stuff like that, and I got into an argument with him about how he never, when he talks to customers, he never asks what length log they want, you know, because some people, they'll be like, well, I have a stove that fits up to 30-inch logs, you know, so we don't have to make as many cuts if we have a longer log. So he was getting pissy about that. He said, well, just cut 16 inches all the time. That's all you have to do. No big deal. I said, well, ask the question. It takes 10 seconds to ask a question. Talk about no big deal. And we moved past that, and then I said something about, well, you know, you really didn't do much today. You really slacked off. You disappeared on me, and it's becoming a common thing. He goes, well, how about I go over there and throw a left hook at you? And I just, like, chuckled, and I was like, go ahead. And he didn't even try to throw a punch. He just went right for the wrestling, which really kind of puzzled me, because the last fight he was in, I know that he got beat by wrestling. So,
jeez. Wow.
But I tuned him up pretty good the second time, and I had him on the ground. I was punching him in the head, and I got to the point where I saw him in the fetal position, and I'm like, I'm not going to, you know, do anything else to this kid. I didn't elbow him, knee him, or kick him, or anything like that. Just all punches in the second round.
Yeah.
So I asked if he was done, and he yelled out, I was done before.
Well, so, you know, I think a lot of times situations like that, it's good to try to go for a submission pretty quick. That way you don't have to break your knuckles and hurt the guy too much. You know, you don't have to crank it, just make him stop it.
I was going for the guillotine right off the bat when we were wrestling, but I just couldn't get my arm under the neck.
Yeah.
You know, and he just kept furiously trying to work my thumb, almost broke my thumb off trying to get me to release him. But I made a conscious decision at first to just put all my weight on him and just let him tire himself out, because I figured it wouldn't take long. He was already out of breath in a couple minutes. But what ended up happening is he came up and tried to like justify it by saying we were both drunk. Didn't even say I'm sorry or anything like that. He just sounded like really depressed, and he's like, oh, we're both drunk, maybe you should sleep it off. And I go, you know, get your crap and get out of here. I'm sick of dealing with this. You know, he's bringing nothing but stress. So overnight, he took every single piece of equipment I have, like all my chains, all my cable pullers, everything but my chainsaws, basically. And because those were in the house. And he took both the splitters that we have joint ownership of. And so I came out to look for him the next day. And as soon as I saw him, I couldn't stop myself. I was going to just talk to him, but he was around the corner from his house on a dead-end dirt road. He had a trailer backed up to the dead end with the splitter behind that. His girlfriend was splitting all the wood, and he was sitting on the tailgate. He had kind of like a smile on his face before he saw me, and then he looked up, and his eyes just, whoa. So I grabbed him by the shirt, and I picked him up off the tailgate, backed him up next to a tree, and brought him down to the ground, and I was yelling at him the whole time, giving my shit back. And he's like, no, no. And then he started yelling, Andrea, get the gun, shoot him, get the gun, shoot him. So thankfully I had a guy with me who was, you know, my other employee, and he cuts wood. And he's a hunter, so he knows all about guns. He actually had a .45 on his hip, you know, just thinking something might go wrong that morning, so he brought it out there. And she went to the truck, got the gun out, and this is all behind my back. I don't see any of this. I'm still talking to this kid. And she's firing the gun, you know, trying to yank the trigger, working the safety, trying to figure out what the hell, why this gun won't fire. The whole time he's yelling, shoot her, shoot him, shoot him, shoot him. Why aren't you shooting him?
Jeez.
And I actually said to this, I didn't throw a single punch that day. I said to him in the middle of the whole thing, I go, I'm not going to punch you. I'm not going to give you the excuse. And he's still yelling at her to shoot me. So thankfully the guy I was with yelled at the girl. She threw the gun in a truck. He grabbed the gun and put it in his truck. And then the cops showed up. So cops couldn't do anything. They just basically took our statements, and they'll probably indict her.
Who called the cops?
Well, he called his cops after I got off him, let him up. He called his town's cops, and I called the cops in my town one town over because the stuff was stolen from my house here. So two different police departments show up, three or four officers. And we were there for about an hour sorting things out. And come to find out, we were trying to figure out why she couldn't get that gun to fire. And there was a spent round in the chamber of the gun, because we were looking at it later. And the hunter guy looked at the ground where he took all the bullets out before he put it in the truck. And he saw there was a spent round on the ground. So that's literally what saved my life, is that what probably happened is he was teaching her how to use the gun. And he goes, why don't you fire off a shot? I'll show you how. She fired off a shot, and then they forgot to rack a new round in.
Man, well.
Not an automatic, thank God.
Whew, well, happy new year, buddy. Glad you made it. Unbelievable.
And then yesterday I find out that not only was she trying to shoot me, she was pointing that gun at the back of my head.
Oh, nice.
Well, not just trying to, you know, get a back wound there. She's trying to take me out.
Wow. So, hopefully the whole thing's over, and hopefully you got a lot of your stuff back.
No, none of my stuff is back. I'm going to have to take the kid to court. And I found out from the chief of police that she'll be indicted in January for, I don't know what the charge is, but there was only one technicality that could have saved her. And it's there's a real controversial case here with some guy waving a gun at somebody that trespassed on this property. And he was a really popular guy, and they just had a grassroots movement behind him, and it was, you know, trying to get him out of jail after he got convicted. So they made a law that you can have a gun and wave a gun on your own property at somebody, but if you try to pull the trigger or make an attempt to actually shoot them, then it goes beyond. You can't get protected by that law. It's only if you wave a gun. So she's not going to be protected by that. She'll be indicted.
Unbelievable. I mean, normally we spend so much time talking about other fights. Wow. You know.
And you know, this kid's so stupid to put his girlfriend in that position. Number one. And it's his problem. You know, he should have dealt with it on his own, like a man. I did nothing to deserve that. He's the one that should be coming and apologizing to me and, you know, trying to make it right, but he just made it worse. It's like, you know, you asked for the fight. I fought you.
Yeah.
What do you want?
Yeah.
So I just turned into a complete coward about the whole situation now. You won't even talk about it. It's just a ridiculous thing to have to deal with. You know?
Well, I guess
it was on my birthday, and the next day I come to find out he had $1,000 worth of repairs he had to do to his truck. So karma catches up with people like that.
Hey. But,
I guess we can
get back to the relatively sane world of controlled fighting, huh? Wow, some story.
Yeah, well, if we would have actually been fighting in a cage, I wouldn't even have a scratch on me. But.
Yeah, no, that's the problem with street stuff, because I would notice a lot of times new guys would come into the gym and they'll just spaz. I mean, they'll do things that you just normally don't expect. Like you said, the guy goes after your thumb, trying to break your thumb. I mean, you normally don't see stuff like that. But that's the thing with newies, and it's the same thing in a boxing gym, I'm sure. You know, you just don't know what these guys are going to do, and they usually have a minute or two, then they run out of steam. But in that first minute or two, anything can happen. So, man, glad you're okay.
Yeah, I'm just getting over the bit of fuzzy-headedness I have. I think I might have got a mild concussion when I hit the rock, but
yeah,
the wound itself was just sort of a scrape, so... And other than the night it happened when it bled a little bit, it hasn't really bothered me. I don't think I have any bone damage or anything like that. It was just maybe my brain hit the side of my head hard enough to cause some kind of funk for a little while. But I actually had it worse than boxing.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I'm sure you've been hit worse than that. You've been hurt worse than that. That's the one thing about this weird passion of ours. I think all three of us can say we've been through worse.
Right.
Oh, wow.
It's always good to know you still got it, but when you had to beat up a friend like that because you just can't help him anymore and he pulls something like that, it always sucks.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I ever really got my bell rung in a boxing match. First time I'd ever really been stunned. You know, I'd been in fights before. You know, for the most part, I was always in street fights. I was just the guy dishing it out. I'm in my first fight, which I ended up losing in the third round just because I didn't know how to get myself in shape. I'm fighting this guy. I hurt him in the first. He was a real tall guy, and he was a couple years older than me. He had trained for a year but didn't have any fights yet. And so we're fighting, and, you know, second round, he caught me with about four or five consecutive straight right hands, you know. And I took him for the most part. And I remember at one point he caught me with one. My whole mind went in a daze, and literally it felt like it was a couple minutes, which was actually probably about a half a second. And I was like, all right. Like, I felt like I was in a dream world. Like, all right, and yep, world's a beautiful place. Where the hell am I? And I remember looking up, and I said, oh, my God, I'm in a boxing match. I was like, okay. And then I shook that one off, and then finally I really ran out of gas and got stopped in the third. And the other time, really getting my bell rung, in a fight that I won, a fight the guy from Penn State, we were just going at it back and forth. I knocked him down, gave him a standing eight count, then I knocked him down. Then he was hitting me, I'm hitting him back. And he caught me with a pretty good right hand, and luckily decided to give an eight count, you know. It was Teddy Cooper was the referee. And he, instead of making me walk forward, which I perfected my drunk, stumbling, straight man, like I'm sober, walk. He was making me go to the side. I remember him saying, where are you? And I'm like, oh, shit, where the hell am I? Once again, feeling that it was a couple seconds, I felt like the kid in class that the teacher called on and couldn't remember the answer. So I'm like, oh, my God, where the hell am I? Where the hell am I? Where the hell am I? And I remember, then I realized where I was at Mansfield University. And I literally shouted in his face, I'm like, Mansfield! And he's like, okay, okay. And I'm waiting for the walk forward. He goes, okay, walk to the right. Oh, shit, I haven't perfected that yet. So I hop. I literally did a bunny hop to the right. And, you know, we continued to fight on. I ended up stunning the guy again and, you know, going on the winning decision.
Hmm. Yeah, it's a funny feeling when you take a headshot that you know
is kind
of damage. I had one of my last sparring sessions when I was still throwing a box a couple of years ago when I was living in Mass there. I had boxed this kid, and it was weird. It was like I was on a ton of caffeine, and I kind of felt good, but I had my brain, you know? I don't know. It was the weirdest experience I've ever had in boxing because it felt like it woke me up instead of making me woozy like it's supposed to do. And I had it for a couple of days like that. That went away eventually. But getting back to real boxing, I know you guys saw the big fight between Adamek and Cunningham this past weekend, but I was otherwise occupied with all the drama going down.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Talk about that one a little bit.
Yeah.
So how did it go? I mean, I didn't even see any highlights since then.
First thing I'll say is I don't think it lived up to the 2008 fight. Cunningham actually came out with a much better game plan and avoided getting hit with the shots in the first fight that knocked him down and stunned him. I came out and said last week, and also before the fight started, I watched it at the Christmas tree lock. My shift was ending at 4:00. And the fights were starting at 4:00, the main event was going to start at 5:00. And, you know, and I had to actually stay on a little bit longer until another person got there. So I knew I was going to make it home in time. So I'm like, well, shit, I'm going to watch it on our TV there. Well, the problem is, we always look at good reception. It's like, if you're watching, like, one of our channels with a sitcom on it, that's fine. But if you're watching something with a live feed, like a football game, a basketball game, or a boxing match, we always don't get the greatest reception. So there were some times we were getting a lot of fuzziness, and we were getting little breaks in the action. So you might see at one point, like, a little, like, the TV would almost freeze, and they could, say, be in the red corner. And then by the time the TV kind of unfreezes, 5 or 6 seconds have passed, and they're in the center of the ring. But Cunningham came in with a good game plan to box. I said last week, for Steve to win this fight, he was going to be the underdog because Adamek had a superior chin and superior punching power. And Steve's game plan had to be 2 shots at a time and move. His mistake in the last fight was Adamek was so easy to hit, he was going for 3, 4, and 5 punches and then getting caught with the counters because he was standing in the danger zone. He made a great work of his jab this time. He was able to catch Adamek with a lot of flush punches. Adamek did land some in return, and they were harder. But overall, I felt Steve controlled the fight. Went to a decision. I thought Steve won 7 or 8 of the rounds. I couldn't judge it as accurately as I did the fight we called a couple years ago because, once again, like I said, I wasn't getting a crisp reception on our TV, but I did have Steve winning the fight. It went to the split decision, was originally announced as a draw, and then they miscalculated and Adamek won a split decision again. And, you know, very disappointing. I thought Steve, he boxed his ass off, and I really deserved to win that fight.
The articles I read said he had a pretty starching jab through the whole thing that was landing like crazy.
It was very hard, very crisp.
Yeah, and the whole thing I couldn't understand. How do you not be able to add up these scorecards and announce, oh, well, we've made a mistake? Because my initial reaction was that I think that Steve fought a great fight. And, Tony, I have to ask you, you know, I noticed by the third round I was kind of scratching my head that Adamack wasn't even trying to work the body much, because Steve was just, he had a good rhythm going. And the way to get a good boxer out of that is to just take those wheels away, get in there and bang the body. And I just didn't see that sense of urgency from Adamack. And so I had Steve comfortably ahead halfway through the fight. And then he started to tire a bit, and Thomas was coming on, but I still think Steve had at least a one-round edge on my card. But the problem was, you know, scoring a fight like that is so tough because, you know, a lot of those rounds were so close, and my gut reaction was when they announced a draw, I really wasn't upset. But then they came on, and Michael Buffer, oh, we've had a mistake, and it's like, oh, my God, another black eye.
I didn't hear that part of it. Wow.
When they first announced it, I was watching it with two of the guys at our tree lot. One of them is a kid that I grew up with that I actually took to his first fight in Atlantic City for an Arturo Gatti title fight back in 2006. So he'd been watching fights with me for years. And another guy was a gentleman we work with who's in his, you know, 40s or so. And, you know, he's, hey, you know, sit down and watch a fight with you guys. Okay, so we're watching it. And the first thing I said to the woman was, hey, guys, see that referee there? Yeah. I said, I got a Christmas card from him 2 days ago. Oh, really? No shit. I'm like, yeah, I've known him for almost 20 years. So, oh, my God, that's so cool. And then I said, they showed Steve's wife, who, you know, I know she helped set him up with an interview with Rich and I a couple years ago. I'd met her a few times. So now it comes to the decision, and they say, okay, 115-115, a draw. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, then 115 and 113 Cunningham. Okay. And then I'm like, wait a minute. I said, Michael Buffer, from an experienced guy as he is, he's announcing this wrong. Because if it's a majority draw, an announcer will usually say 115, 115, a draw. Okay. And then 115, 113. And now once Cunningham has already gotten that one vote, there's no way Adamack can win the fight. It's either going to be 115, 115 a draw, then for Cunningham, then for Adamack. So you should announce the draw last. You should say, okay, this judge had it for Cunningham, this judge had it for Adamack, this judge had it a draw, it's a draw. Or if it is going to be in Cunningham's favor, it would be 115, 115 a draw, and then say 115, 113, 116, 112 for your winner, Steve Cunningham. So the first thing I said to these guys, I said, something's wrong with the scoring. Because Michael Buffer, if someone did have it a draw, then that should have been announced last. Mm-hmm. And then that's, as soon as those words left my lips, they said, wait a minute, we had a mistake.
And, you know, I had to feel so bad for Cunningham. I mean, you know, considering his circumstance, and it's like, you know, does it have to end the way it ended? I mean, you can argue the decision forever. But to come on and announce a draw, and like I said, my feeling, and I haven't rewatched it, but my feeling is I was not upset with the draw. But the way they came on with that mistake, it's like that had to be so disheartening for Cunningham. I mean,
And also, the promoter for Adamack, he didn't really announce it, but apparently he said to somebody at ringside, and it was overheard, that he didn't think his guy even won the fight.
Well,
so his own
promoter. Yeah, exactly. In fact, I have the quote right here. Let's see, because I printed this out for it. And the quote was, Adamack's Polish co-promoter, Ziggy Rozalski, was also pleased by the result. Asked as he walked through the casino what he thought of Adamack's win, Wolzowski said he got a Christmas present.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, it was.
And speaking of Christmas presents, I wanted to give a heads up on our surprise guest for next week. We have booked Steve Cunningham.
Oh, shit!
Just about official. So. right when I got that that PR from Mark Abrams, is the guy that represents Steve, and he's actually the guy that has a similar email address to Tony instead of
LBI.
Philly Box is his.
Wow. That will be
Philly Box without the name.
Yeah. I just can't wait to talk to him about this. I mean, just to see how he's doing mentally. I mean, it's wow. Oh, that is super.
So we'll definitely make sure we stay on that and get it going. But last message I got from Mark said that most likely next week, next Thursday. So couldn't get him on for tonight, but I tried. Anyway, we do have to call Bradley Nicholson here, so I'm going to try to connect him. He is one half of the duo we're supposed to interview tonight. I'm not sure if we're going to get Taylor Nicholson, but Bradley and Taylor are supposed to be on, and I only got a number for Bradley's gym, so unless they're both training, might only have Bradley. I'm sure he's 20 minutes ago. That's what happens when... seems like every week my computer would be fine until 5 minutes before the show. Everything goes fucking haywire. Every week it's almost like my computer saying, man, I don't want to do this again. This is a lot of work.
The customer you are calling is unavailable at the moment. Oh. Please try again later. La Bique.
So I call the gym here. One
last. Hello, everybody.
Hi, I'm looking for Bradley Nicholson.
Bradley Nicholson, yeah.
You there?
Hello, Bradley Nicholson speaking.
Hey, Bradley, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron. We're also on the line here with Tony the Tornado Pentagal and Psychic Tom Padgett. How's it going?
Oh, pretty good. Just here at the gym, just doing some early training before the whole classes start.
Cool.
How are you today?
There with you?
Pardon me?
Is Taylor there with you, too?
Tyler,
sorry.
Yeah, my brother Tyler, he's here too.
Okay, are you guys on speakerphone there or something? Or can you get on?
No, you want me to grab him?
We could demonstrate with him or something, if that works.
Pardon me?
We could do one at a time. We'll ask you some
questions. Okay,
you can put him on.
Okay, that works.
Okay. So I read a little bit about your background. You're 1-1 as an amateur, right?
Yeah.
And you already had a title shot, right? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I had a fight in Battlefield, and then I had a fight in AMA, which is a different league. And I had a title fight in my second fight, which is the one in AMA. I fought Oliver Avancher at a bantamweight, which is 135.
And your parents gave you boxing gloves when you were just 11 years old, huh?
Yeah. When me and my brother were just younger, he was 12, I was 11. They just one day came home with a pair of boxing gloves and was like, here, you guys, I get something for you guys to do. And not only that, you guys will be able to defend yourselves. Like, you'll kind of learn a little bit, right? And, yeah, so we just kind of had a blast, like, boxing with each other and our friends in our backyards and stuff like that. And then we just kept doing that all the way out through high school. And we actually got really good and just being the skinny kids that were, the tough guys kind of, but at the same time, we all had a good attitude, right?
Cool. And what made you choose MMA instead of boxing, after all?
Well, boxing was fun, but when you start getting into the mixed martial arts, there's just so much more you can learn, right? There's all different types when it comes to ground, stand-up, and even in between. So it just was so fascinating to me. I just wanted to start learning whatever I could.
And do you have any favorite moves that you are submissions or strikes or anything like that that you try to go for a lot?
I'm a fan of like kicks and like jump kicks and stuff. I don't do them yet in any of my fights just because you got to perfect them if you're going to try to do the risky stuff. So, but I love doing like crescent kicks and spinning crescent kicks and 360 jump kicks and stuff. Like I practice them all the time in the gym. That's one thing everybody knows me for. And eventually you're going to start seeing them in my fights too. So.
Yeah, it seems like it's getting harder and harder to land a kick in these big fights when you watch these guys because they've learned to defend it most of the times. And even if they do land it, it's kind of like a glancing blow. So it's very
Yeah, you really got to pick your shots.
Unless you're Anderson Silva, then you just put your foot out there and some guy runs into it.
Yeah, exactly. That's where we all want to get to eventually.
So where exactly are you from for all our viewers out there?
I lived in Surrey, B.C. my whole life. Been born at Surrey Memorial Hospital in Surrey, B.C. And, yeah, I've just lived here my whole life.
All right. And
yeah, I just...
What's your ultimate goal with the sport?
Actually, like, I want to become a professional fighter, and I want to do this for a living just because I enjoy it so much. And I'm actually pretty good at it for the little amount of like experience that I have actually fighting, but like just because of my raw talent and my love for the sport, I excel so much faster when you like something, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I see myself being a professional fighter and doing it for a living for sure.
Cool.
Let me ask you this one question: getting your first pair of gloves at the age of 11. And then believe me, I know that feeling. Was there anybody that you looked up to at that time, being so young, that was an inspiration to you?
It sounds very traditional, but Muhammad Ali, he was one of the biggest names when it came to boxing that everybody knew, who was so great. So he was, like, automatically somebody I followed. But the first boxer/kickboxer other than him was Mike Zambidis.
I don't even know who that is. Tell us a little bit about
him. Iron Mike Zambidis, he fights in K1. I believe he fights at 155 pounds. And I just seen a video of him on YouTube one day, and it was a highlight video of him just fighting all these guys that looked so much bigger than him and just looked like this little pit bull that could take out everybody.
I know Tom has a question. Come on, Tom.
Yes, sir. Bradley, like, when you're on the ground, do you prefer more of a ground-and-pound approach, or are you more of a submission guy, like more jiu-jitsu? What do you prefer?
I like the strike, right? So when I'm on the ground, I'll try and tie somebody up because I got long limbs for being at 135. I'm 6 feet tall, right? So I'll tie people up a bit and try and work the strike. And if I can, get ground and pound. But I'm really good at striking in awkward positions, what makes people just uncomfortable. And, again, for a skinny guy, I have pretty decent power. So, like I said, I don't necessarily stick with one thing, though, because that makes you predictable, right? So I try
right,
to keep it mixed
right.
up so nobody can kind of follow my style.
Yeah, but I think the key to really landing some good kicks is to be comfortable on the ground. Because back in the early
yeah,
days of
exactly.
the sport, I mean, I go back to the, you know, quite a ways myself, and it seemed like back then a lot of the guys that had decent kicks were afraid to throw them because they didn't want taken down.
Didn't
want to
get
and
taken
think,
down.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And one of the guys that really started to change that was Boss Rutten, because Boss Rutten
yeah.
came from a strong kickboxing background, and his attitude was, okay, you want to take me down? Take me down. I don't care. But I'm coming
yeah.
after your head with
yeah.
my kicks.
I'm talking
and
to him down.
Exactly. And I think if you can keep working on some of those unconventional kicks, they seem to be working at times a little better because, as Rich was saying, so many guys are hard to kick against with regular Muay Thai because everybody practices defense so much. But if you can do crescent
yeah.
kicks and stuff like that, that's the kind of thing that you don't see in the gym that much now, you know. So best
yeah,
of luck.
Exactly.
The other thing about the kick, you look at, I know one of Frank Shamrock's fights and one of Randy Couture's fights, I think they broke the same bone in the upper arm from blocking kicks. So.
Blocking kicks, yeah. There's another person, Rich Franklin, fought Chuck Liddell and broke his arm from blocking a kick too.
Yeah.
And then knocked Chuck Liddell out.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. That's that was one thing that was really comfortable, just, again, with having long limbs. I knew I'd be able to tie them up if I was on my back and be able to fought the attempt submission, but strike as well. And in my title fight, because the guy I was fighting was very wrestling-based style, so I was mainly just controlling the striking. He was just being able to take me down, and I was just fighting with him on my back and then fighting to get mounts, and then we were just rolling all over the place.
So being over, about a year apart between you and your brother, do you guys spar with each other, and have you...
We spar a lot, and we're about the same size and, like, a similar skill level, and so it makes for really interesting matches. Everybody gathers around the cage while we're sparring.
You never get mad at him? You're always professional?
Well, we have our moments, right? But we're professional when we start sparring, right? We argue like we're mad at each other, but then when we get in the cage, like, we just look like we're sparring, right? We're not, we don't use anger while we fight. We're really calm. Mm-hmm. So just because it allows us to think a little bit.
Right.
So it kind of helps for when we are arguing and still end up sparring and stuff. We don't take it too far.
Cool. How about favorite fighters out there? You got anybody that you try to pick up stuff from when you watch, or anybody that you can't?
Honestly, my favorite fighter that I seen in one day, and I was like, who is this guy? It was Dominic Cruz. I seen the way he moved, and I was like, that is just amazing. He's just so amazing when he moves and fights people. It's just awesome. I try to emulate his footwork, and it actually has helped me in a lot of, like, situations. But obviously, I'm nowhere near as good as he is.
Cool. You'll get there someday. Just keep practicing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. That's all it is. Just practice makes perfect, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it doesn't help to have, I mean, it does help to have some natural instinct, too, but.
Yeah, exactly.
If you work hard enough at anything, you can become an expert. So.
Yeah. Hard work is pretty much the main thing, actually, that's before I am, at least.
What do you love most about the sport?
Honestly, probably after you fight somebody, you kind of have a respect for them, right? Because, you know, they're willing to do the same thing as you are to kind of get to where they want to be. It really shows how much that person is willing to do to get there.
Right.
And, I know how hard I try, and if this person's willing to try as hard as me, then I have the respect for them right after that fight, right? Even just tournament fights or set out fights, it's the same thing. Because none of them come from no hard work. You're always working hard to get there.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say, do you have any upcoming fights, anything set up yet for your next fight?
I haven't got any opponents, but I do have two events that I'm going to be fighting in. One is a Battlefield event, probably here in Vancouver, February 22nd. And another one is called Warpath, which is in Chilliwack in D.C., and that's on March 8th. They're still just finding my opponents, though.
Okay. And do you have any timetable for when you want to go pro?
Well, it just depends on how my fights go within the next year, but I could see myself being pro within the next year just due to the fact that my fighting style is very exciting to watch. And I'm at a pretty high level for just starting now.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the guys that I'm fighting are not easy fights to find for me because, like you said, I'm kind of a higher level for just starting out now in the actual set MMA fights rather than doing tournaments and stuff. Usually the guys that are my level have been fighting for a while. I just didn't know the people to get into it right away. And then when I came to this gym, my coach started setting me up fights.
Anybody that you want to thank or give a shout out to out there before we get your brother on?
I'd like to thank Terry Wimmer, actually, for giving me your Facebook and kind of giving me your contact information, because this is actually a really cool experience being on your radio show and everything. Not only that, but I would like to thank you, and I'd just like to thank all my family.
All right. Well, I definitely see a bright future for you because We don't get that a lot. You know, sometimes people forget to thank us. So we love to hear about this stuff. And it's always a good idea when you're on a radio show. So.
Yeah, no, well, like you said, you guys put me on, so why wouldn't I thank you, right?
Right, yeah. And Carrie's one of those guys that got wrapped up in the Zions thing. I've been fighting in court for those shareholders and people that got burned by that whole bankruptcy situation.
Yeah, I heard about that, too.
So it's always good to you know, do a favor for some of those folks who got burned.
And, yeah, exactly.
And don't ever get sponsored by them. You know that, right?
Yeah, no. Like I said, he informed me that there wasn't he didn't inform me very much, but he just told me how, like, they kind of screwed a bunch of people over really bad.
All right, well, it was great talking to you, and we wish you the best of luck, and keep honing your craft, and you'll go far, I'm sure.
All right, thank you. It was really great talking to you guys, too. And again, thanks a lot for putting me on your radio show.
Just keep working hard, Bradley. We'll look forward to seeing you in UFC someday. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Guaranteed I'll be there one day.
All right, buddy. We'll look forward to it. Work hard.
Thanks again.
All right. So, let's grab Taylor, I guess. We'll pick it
up. 1 second here. Bye. He's coming here right now.
I keep calling him Taylor. I don't know why.
Yeah, it's Tyler Nicholson.
Tyler, okay.
Hello?
Tyler, how's it going?
Hey, not too bad. How about yourself?
Good. This is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron. We also have Tom the Psychic Paget and Tony the Tornado Pentacal here.
Well, how's it going, guys?
Good evening, Tyler.
Not too bad, not too bad. Just at the gym right now.
All right. So your brother kind of gave us a rundown of how you both got into boxing at a young age. What was that like growing up and you know, mixing it up a little bit around the yard and with your friends?
It was actually pretty cool. And I had quite a few backyard boxing matches before we ever went to a gym. We had our parents come home and give us a set, so we used to bring them out to the park after school or in the summertime, bring them up to the skate park and let all our friends just all kind of beat the crap out of each other in the best way we could. And it actually, believe it or not, made a lot of my friends want to fight each other because they had a positive way to kind of resolve their issues.
Yeah. Well, I've taken boxing gloves to parties before and had a bad result, but as long as people aren't drinking too much, usually it goes down all right.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty cool. It was interesting, though. It definitely got us going on a good path.
Mm-hmm.
I know when I was younger, like in the neighborhood where I grew up, what we would always like to do is, you know, we would set up where we'd have, like, you know, one big fight. So, like, dude, it'd be me and this kid, Scott, or my friend Tom, and you know, another kid. What we would do is we would actually do a whole promotion of the thing for weeks. You know, we wouldn't just, okay, let's put the gloves on today and so-and-so's going to fit so-and-so. Oh, no. We'd do, like, a whole promotion of it, and we would video training sessions. We would do interviews. We would do room walks. Oh, I mean, literally, if we could have had pyrotechnics at the time, we would have. If it was probably today, we'd have someone walking us in the ring with, like, little, like, sparklers and stuff going. That'd be our pyro. And we would video it, and we'd have post-fight interviews. It was a lot of fun, you know. And, like, we would have, like, you know, referee, and we'd have corner men, and then we'd have, like, someone there who would be doing, like, the color commentary, play-by-play. I mean, we turned it into a whole production. I mean, we were just brawlers with gloves, and, you know, like 13 years old, 14 years old. I mean, the fights were pretty piss poor, you know, but it was just a whole lot of fun. I mean, I watch some of those videos now, and I'm like, oh, my God, did I really look that bad? And I'm seeing just watching myself makes me cringe. That I'd like to get in Doc Brown's 1985 DeLorean and go back in the walking time to slap the shit out of myself. Video kid, let me train it for a little bit. I know how to do this.
Yeah, I can remember when I was in high school and I was in English class one day and I was talking about boxing with a couple of the more popular kids than I was, and one of the kids says, oh, yeah, you box? I'll kick your ass. well, we fight. And so I said, all right, come over to my house today. And I invited him over, and he had all his friends there. I had a couple of my friends there. We put it on tape, and it only lasted about 2 minutes. I hit him in the nose enough times, he started bleeding everywhere. And I showed the tape to pretty much the whole school over the next couple.
Yeah.
And I became the popular guy.
Yeah, he kind of took down the bully. That's awesome, yeah.
But,
yeah, it was
go
ahead.
What's your technique like in MMA? Do you favor striking, submissions?
I actually, I'm pretty all around. I started as a striker with the boxing. I moved into kickboxing and trained for quite a few years. I got my black belt in American Jiu-Jitsu kickboxing, which is above the waist kicks. And then I ended up going to a different gym, doing some Muay Thai and learning the technique below the waist kick. And I've just been training actually in a mixed martial arts gym for maybe about a year and a half now. So I prefer striking, but I'm comfortable on the ground. I did some wrestling in high school, so I know a little bit of the basics of that stuff. And I'm pretty much comfortable wherever.
I went 8-2 in my senior year in wrestling, and I weighed only about 165 max most days, and mostly 160, and I was wrestling 171. So,
yeah,
it was tough.
Yeah,
You know, if you practice enough, and we had a hell of a workout routine. I mean, we were just unbelievable.
Yeah, the wrestling definitely is that you gotta put the nose on the grindstone and go hard.
Yeah, I've
seen some of the conditioning.
After boxing, I mean, you know, being in there and taking the punches and stuff like that is one thing, but, you know, throwing somebody around takes a lot of energy, a lot of strength, and a lot of, you know, hard work every single day. I mean, boxing is tough enough as it is, but once you have to really, you know, pick somebody's up and put them on the ground or do all that stuff that you do in wrestling, you start to realize, you know, wrestling sometimes can be a lot harder than boxing.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a reason why those guys are so muscular and strong.
Right.
Yeah, there's a reason why those guys are so big. They go through some grueling workouts, that's for sure.
Yeah, one of the things I used to hate doing was, I'm sure you probably did, they call it spins, where you get one guy on the ground on all fours, and you got to put your chest on his back and just spin around.
Spin around him, yeah.
Hated that shit.
I actually have some little kids doing that right now, so it's actually pretty funny. They're just working on doing spins and then taking the back and going to chokes and arm bars, so.
Yeah, I think I got into a couple matches in high school that it was before MMA's time, but these kids were using MMA moves. I think I got put in, like, some kind of a backwards reverse triangle choke at one point in that hospital.
Yeah.
They put me in the captain's place one time. They just go out there and stay off your back, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, just kind of fed you to the wolf.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How about favorite fighters out there? You got anybody that you watch a lot of? Try to pick stuff up?
Yeah. Yeah, I actually, when I first started really, really getting into the UFC stuff, I really liked George St. Pierre. He was a dynamic fighter. He could fight on the ground, standing up and everything. But slowly but surely, he's kind of faded out of my spot. I actually now favor Nick Diaz. I absolutely, like, love Nick Diaz. Another favorite fighter of mine, Anderson Silva, obviously. Due to his striking and just everything he's able to accomplish since he's gone to the UFC.
Well, now you get to fight each other. You're about to get a fight, right?
Yeah, well, I think St. Pierre and Nick Diaz now.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah. Yeah, they're fighting. And then Rory McDonald's actually fighting Carlos Condit the same night.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But I tend to... I like the Diaz guys because of the way that they fight. I like the boxing and the way that they're able to land strikes and kind of in a different style than most people, and they're actually effective doing it.
Mm-hmm. Now, we asked your brother a little bit about, you know, fighting each other and what that's like, you know, doing the sparring and stuff like that. But we didn't quite give him the old question that people might be wondering out there. Who do you think is the better fighter between these two, if you had to guess?
To tell you the truth, I'm the older brother. You know, I helped bring my brother into what we're doing. I wouldn't say necessarily there's a better fighter of us. It's maybe just who performs better on a single night, you know? We've actually had people always ask, oh, like, you guys, who would win out of a fight and this and that? But, I mean, we train together every day. We know each other fucking, or that, like, we know each other completely, you know what I mean? So, yeah, I do something, and he knows what I'm going to do, so he'll try and counter it. And sparring with my brother is a little bit different than sparring pretty much anybody else, because he's pretty close. Like, we're both a little different, but we're almost identical as well. There's not very much age between us, so we're similar sizes, similar aggression. And we let each other holler every once in a while, but we're not too crazy on each other.
Yeah, sometimes I kind of wonder what life would have been like if I'd grown up with a brother, because I had three sisters growing up, and two older sisters, and one of them was named Mary Jane. They used to call her Manly Jane around the neighborhood because she was a
Yeah.
And I hate to admit it, but she used to kick my ass all the time. I finally got to the level I could beat her up, and I felt like shit when I did it. You know?
Well, I got a little sister. She's 5 years younger than me, and I can honestly say still to this day, I made her put gloves on and just mess around me one day, and she hauled off and cracked me in the nose so hard it started bleeding. I've still never been hit that hard in the nose before by anyone. My little sister at the time was only like 4 feet tall, like 11 years old.
Yeah, I say it whenever we have a woman guest on the show who's a fighter. I always say that, you know, it's like when you see women fight, sometimes it's like they're fighting for all of womankind. You know, they have to prove, because nobody can think a girl, nobody thinks a girl can fight half the time.
Yeah, and then they haul off and hit you.
But getting back to you, you got any fights lined up? Anything that is on the horizon that you know about?
Right now, at the moment, I am actually in negotiation. I'm trying to get a 125 Muay Thai belt fight in, I believe it's late February. I'm just trying to get the closing details on it before it's all said and done. But if it doesn't work out, then I'm going to be fighting in Battlefield, the same card as my younger brother.
Oh, cool. Is that the first time you fought on the same card, or is it...
Actually, we back when we were just doing the local tournaments, we fought once on the same card together, and then we actually have fought now twice. We fought Battlefield once, and we both fought, and we fought at the All Martial Arts 6, and we both fought on that card as well. He did a mixed martial arts. I did a Muay Thai fight. I go back and forth between boxing, Muay Thai, and MMA. And my brother just does mixed martial arts right now.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So that's probably a little bit difficult at times to restrain yourself from being able to do some of the stuff you can do in MMA in these individual sports angles.
In my last boxing fight, the guy, he kind of grabbed me, and we ended up in a tie clinch position, and my brain wanted to throw a knee, but I knew not to, right? Like, I trained for it, so.
Right.
But it's definitely, your brain definitely is like, go for the takedown, or throw a knee, or something like that, and you kind of got to stop yourself.
Yeah, I saw some submission grappling for the first time live out in Vegas when I was out there a few months ago, last year. And I was surprised that these guys use a lot of MMA stuff in it. And I thought before that it was just basically mostly glorified wrestling until I actually saw it. And there was actually a one-legged kid in the tournament that I watched, and he almost went to the finals.
Yeah, wow, eh?
Really good.
Yeah, I've actually seen on YouTube and on some of the UFC Central, whatever, a guy named Nick Newell. He only has... He has 1.5 arms.
Yeah.
He had his arm cut off, and he's actually really good.
He was the fighter of the year for that MMA Uncensored show.
Oh, really?
So.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
He's a tough guy.
To be able to accomplish those things after that, like I actually, like, I didn't have my arm cut off, but I had my thumb cut off after my, before my very first fight. So I was out for about a year and a half and had a couple surgeries, and they reattached the thumb and all that. And now my thumb knuckle doesn't bend, but they bent it so that I can make a fist again. And I've done pretty good since then. So.
That must be tough when you're trying to wrap up a choke and you...
Yeah, and if they're pulling.
Yeah.
There's a couple times, like, if I land on it the wrong way, sometimes it's sore. If I, striking is pretty good, but grappling, it gets sore and tender sometimes.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, I feel like I'm asking all the questions here. Some of my co-hosts need to chime in.
Okay.
Come on, guys. What do you got?
Okay, Tyler, excuse my laryngitis. Tyler, on the ground, do you favor a little more of a jiu-jitsu approach, looking for submissions, or do you prefer more of like a ground-and-pound wrestling attack?
When I hit the ground, I like being kind of on my back because I have very, very flexible hips, so I can get arm bars, triangles, different styles like omoplatas, go-go platas pretty easily. I like to use a rubber guard, so I actually look for submissions, and I'll try to, if I can't get one, I'll try and hold them there, kind of ground it down a little bit until I can move to a submission, and if I get caught in a stalemate, I'll just stand back up, stand up, and either throw a little bit of ground and pound and back out.
Well, you know, I think part of the advantage of starting off so young now is you have to be good everywhere. And I think that if you keep, you just got to keep working both. Even if you prefer to strike, you got to have that submission game down, at least for submission defense. And I think at that point, then you're also going to develop your cardio, because as you know, cardio on the ground is a whole different game than cardio on the feet. And, just back in the old days, in my time, we started with just one discipline, and then when you had to start learning the other ones, it's like, oh, wow, this is a whole other world, but now you young guys can just start off doing everything, so I think you'll have a great chance for a bright future, so just keep working everything. That's the key.
Yeah, well, that's definitely my plan. I definitely want to start competing in the local jiu-jitsu tournaments. I only have at the moment a white belt, but I haven't really been going to the other gym to upgrade or anything. And so I'm still at the beginner stage of the grappling as far as the ranking goes. But I definitely want to get in there and test it out.
Unfortunately for me, the MMA came a little too late in my boxing career to think about it. But having the wrestling background, I always thought I would be good at it. So far, I've only done MMA on drug people, but with a rear naked choke, so maybe get into it. But what's your ultimate goal with this sport here?
Well, I as a kid, I always looked up to pretty much any title holder. I've always wanted a title belt of some type. I didn't really like wrestling on TV too much, other than the fact that they had really shiny belts that they wore. I loved boxing due to the championship belts, and pretty much I just want to become a champion, keep growing. I want to start winning titles in boxing, kickboxing, Muay Thai, grappling, MMA. I just want to become a complete, like, fully rounded out martial artist who can make it maybe to K-1 level of kickboxing or the UFC level of MMA.
There's not a lot of people who cross over, and I think it's something that should be more common, especially like you say, there's different things in these different disciplines that you have to kind of control yourself to not do in certain situations. And, I would think that... that kind of helps, because when you get into the actual MMA and you can do everything, it's like a complete freedom in any situation you can deal with.
Yeah, it's definitely nice to kind of know what you're doing when you're in there, that's for sure. My very first fight, I kind of had a blank out moment where we touched gloves, came out, I threw a left cross and tagged him on the chin. and before I could hit him again, he was on wobbly legs. And when that was my first MMA fight, I was used to kickboxing and boxing and stuff, but he kind of went wobbly, and I didn't really know what to do. I kind of just stood there, like, and then I rushed in afterwards trying to finish him. I ended up losing my very first fight by an armbar, which I didn't tap out to. He didn't have it properly, but the ref just called it because he thought it was too close.
That's frustrating. That had to be so frustrating for you. You know, it's like, hey, come on. I didn't tap. But that, you know, that's part of the problem at the amateur level. They're concerned about fighter safety, and they're just saying, well, hey, no matter what, we're going to err on the side of caution. Nothing you can do about it except get better.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely was frustrating.
What have you seen most about fighting MMA?
What I love most about it?
Or just fighting in general, since you do so many other stuff.
Well, honestly, I just love the I have a hard way of kind of expressing myself as a kid and figuring it out. I was never really like a superstar or anything, and then I started fighting, and not a superstar, but it makes me feel good about myself. It makes me feel like I'm accomplishing something that no one can really take away from me. I have to get in there and do it all by myself, so it's something that if I win or lose, it's all on me. And I like pretty much everything about it. I like getting hit a little bit. I like hitting people a little bit, not in a violent way, but just kind of getting the frustration of daily life out in a positive way.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, I'll let you get back to training. Why don't you give us, you got anybody out there to thank or give a shout out to or anything like that?
I'd like to give a shout out to Jay from Battlefield. He's a promoter. Mike Camood, Jerry Bianco for setting up the fights locally for us. Shout out to my gym, Urban MMA, Craig Yee, founder of Urban MMA, and maybe Jerome Grant, my very first kickboxing instructor.
Cool. Well,
shout out to you guys too for having us talk to you. Thank you guys very much.
No problem. We love to give exposure to, you know, the young kids just coming up and give people listening an idea of what it's like to really get serious and really you know, start out on the right foot. And I think you guys both have that going for you. You're family, so you know you're going to stick together no matter what, I think, and it's good to see that you're taking it to the next level here, and I definitely look forward to seeing your name in lights there on the on a big card. I think that's the moment when I'm going to say, hey, I interviewed that kid.
We knew him years ago. We knew him before he hit the big time. Tyler, I see nothing but good things, man. You keep working, okay? Work hard.
All right. Thanks a lot, man.
You too.
Thank you very much.
All right, so there you go. There's our prospect hour. The Fight News Unlimited show here. But, you know, definitely those two should have a bright future. They sound like they're natural gifted guys. And they got the right idea of training in different disciplines like that, and especially Tyler actually competing in a lot of these different disciplines at the same time. I love to see that because I think they should have more of it across the board. I mean, you hear about like some of these guys, like Junior Dos Santos, who's fighting this weekend. He says he wants to go into boxing, but you know, Dana White will probably never let that happen. But it used to be a lot more common. I know KJ Nunes has gone back and forth between boxing and MMA and stuff like that. But you know, you talk about Muay Thai, kickboxing, and MMA. That's pretty good.
You know, Rich, I think what we seen back in the 90s was a lot more guys competing in wrestling also. I know Dan Henderson, Randy Couture, they were all doing wrestling and MMA at the same time for a while. So, you know, I get crossover going back there.
MMA right now. Everybody.
Can you guys still hear me?
Oh, yes, you're still there.
Yeah, I didn't know if I was waiting. I didn't know if I was supposed to talk or anything.
Sorry.
That's okay. But, yeah, I'll let you guys go, and thanks again for everything.
All right, thank you. You have a good night. And
all right, bye.
All right, Tyler, good luck, man.
Well, good thing we weren't saying anything bad about him, huh?
Yeah.
Hey, guys, I'm still here, you know.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. That's great. That has to be a first.
To bad mouthing me. Those guys are, really far ahead of some of the young kids starting out, I think. So definitely looking forward to seeing them on the big screen someday. All right, we got a couple other little news tidbits to talk about, of course. Talk about extracurricular activity outside the ring here. There's a story here about Paul Daly. He's no stranger to controversy. If you've seen him fight, you probably know he's probably the one guy who's probably never going to end up in the UFC after his last incident that he made the news for. He got pretty much his ass handed to him by Josh Koscheck. He threw a punch at him after the bell in May of 2010, and Dana White says after that, he said, he's done. I don't give a shit. He's the best 170-pounder in the world. He'll never come back here again. I'm probably the most lenient guy in sports, and this is probably one of the most lenient organizations. We're all human. We all make mistakes. Things happen. There's no excuse for that. These guys are professional athletes. You don't ever hit a guy blatantly after the bell like that, whether you're frustrated or not. It was probably one of the dumbest things I've ever seen. I don't care if he fights in every show all over the world and becomes the best, and everybody thinks he's the pound-for-pound best in the world. He will never fight in the UFC again. Well, because of that, when the UFC pretty much bought out Strikeforce, Paul Daly was pretty much the odd man out. And he ended up in Bellator. And he was actually picked as a fan favorite to fight John War Machine Copenhaver. And they were supposed to be the first televised fight of the season, Season 8 welterweight tournament. But that fight was actually postponed after War Machine was injured during training. But now Paul Daly was arrested for a bar fight. And he faces up to 2 years in prison. And I don't know if there's much there about the actual fight. But it says he made his Bellator debut in July 2012 with a TKO win over Rudy Pears in the first round. Bellator hasn't released him or anything like that, but he's unable to enter the United States due to these charges.
Unbelievable.
I don't know where he is. He can't go to the U.S., probably Canada, I guess, but I don't know. It doesn't even say where this fight happened. It just says bar fight, so it's kind of odd. Usually they get more details than that. And it says alleged bar fight. It's kind of weird. But it is what it is there. Another interesting story I found this last week. Unfortunately for the sport of boxing, my Google alerts have been overtaken this week because December 26th is Boxing Day, which is celebrated in Canada and the UK. And every year at this time, when I get my boxing links from Google, which I pretty much build all my news stories for this radio show upon there, I get all Boxing Day stuff for this time of year. But this story came up, and it was pretty interesting. It actually reminded me of a movie with Willem Dafoe. And it's about, this story is about a guy named, probably going to butcher this name, but Tedious Pietrzykowski, who was a prisoner at Auschwitz. And he was prisoner number 77. And there's a story here about another prisoner there who remembers how this guy, his friend, boxed for bread in the notorious Nazi German camp. It's been all but forgotten nearly seven decades after the end of World War II, but the camp was set up by the Nazis in southern Poland after their 1939 invasion to hold and kill political prisoners. And it was eventually to become the hub of the Holocaust. But there's a new book out called The Auschwitz Boxer, and it's brought the story of Pietrzykowski. Getting it right at all. He's little known outside of Poland, but now he's back in the spotlight. And to his friend, who's quoted in this article, he's 89 years old, it seems like yesterday. And he said, the friend said, the first bout took place on a Sunday in March 1941 next to the Auschwitz kitchens between Tadeusz Pietrzykowski and the German Papo Walter Dunning. and that's the capo term is used for common criminals deployed by the Nazis as overseers. And this Walter Dunning was a former middleweight professional who had fallen foul of the law and was looking for an opponent in exchange for a loaf of bread and some margarine. But we talk about how MMA guys don't get paid enough. How about fighting for a loaf of bread and some butter? But Stukowski is a pre-war bantamweight at the boxing club in Legia, Warsaw, arose to the challenge. His nickname is Teddy. He weighed about 45 kilos, 99 pounds, and Walter Dunning weighed around 154 pounds. And in peacetime, the maximum fighting weight in Pietrzykowski's category was 54 kilos and 75 kilos in Dunning's. In June of 1940, Teddy had been on the first train convoy of 700 Polish political prisoners deported to Auschwitz. So he was already very thin after 8 months of backbreaking work and malnutrition, said his friend. He was the smaller of the two, but he was agile and fast. He had an incredible punch, aimed right for the stomach, and knew how to duck his opponent's blows. He won the fight and got his bread and margarine. You have to admit that the Germans kept their promise. More fights were to follow. Pietrzykowski threw himself into them, knowing full well that he risked death by starvation. For his fellow inmates, every blow he struck was a source of pride and hope. We were elated, we said to ourselves. As long as there's a Pole punching a German in the face, Poland's not finished. After Germany's defeat by the Soviets at the Battle of Stalingrad in early 1943, the camp guards from the Nazis' notorious SS sought ways to forget that the tide of war was turning. They watched the matches, pitting prisoners amongst themselves as well as against the capos, and placed bets. After the first scratch bouts, the camp authorities let the boxers build a proper ring and allowed them to make gloves, according to the research done for the book. Pietrzykowski notched up some 40 fights and around 20 more after he was transferred to the Neuengamme camp in northern Germany in 1943. He survived the war, passing away in 1991 in Bielsko-Biala in southern Poland. His most celebrated Auschwitz match was against Schalli Hotnack, a 96-kilo German. He won with a second-round knockout. The bout inspired the 1963 film The Boxer in Death by Slovak director Peter Solem. Auschwitz twin camp of Birkenau was purpose-built nearby in 1942. Jews across Europe, often told by the Nazis that they were being resettled in the East, were sent there directly by train to be murdered in its gas chambers. The new arrivals had a meager chance of surviving thanks to the selection, where the SS picked out individuals deemed suitable for forced labor because of their peacetime professions. Boxers were on that list. Jewish middleweight Salmo Barauk from Greece was one who survived as a result, though he is not known to have faced Pietrzykowski in the ring. The camp also saw football matches as well. And for us, being on the team meant getting extra food rations and getting even lighter forced labor, so it was a chance to survive, said one prisoner who played on the team. Football teams. Another historian at the Auschwitz-Birkenau Memorial Museum said a football pitcher set up right next to the right of the Birkenau train ramp. For people who are about to die, the vision of prisoners playing football against the capos was meant to be reassuring, he said. A million Jews perished at Auschwitz-Birkenau, along with tens of thousands of others, including Poles, Roma, and Soviet prisoners of war between 1940 and its liberation by the Red Army in January 1945. So it's a pretty good article. I was really impressed by that, and it instantly reminded me of, I think the movie was called The Triumph of the Spirit with Willem Dafoe. In the same situation, a guy boxing Germans for bread, basically. So you can imagine, I mean, you talk about loving fighting. You really have to love fighting to fight for bread. I don't think he had much of a choice, but... just an intense story. I'm going to be definitely looking out for that book. And
speaking of books, I just gave myself for Christmas The Good Son, which is the story of Ray Boom Boom Mancini. I haven't really had a chance to start reading it cover to cover yet, but as I do with every book I get, I immediately open to the meatier parts of the book because I have no patience. So with that book, obviously, I read about his tragic fight with Dooku Kim, which was predicted to be just a one-sided, Mancini walkover. But Kim, came to fight, and they said, all leading into it, like I said, before the fight, He built a coffin for Ray Mancini, and then his father admonished him for that, saying it would be disrespectful. And then he had, I think it meant to say live or die, but the translation said killer beach boat. Wrote that on a lampshade in his hotel room. And then before the fight, they said people in Mancini's dressing room could hear him pounding on lockers in his dressing room. And, you know, said gave Mancini hell. And they said actually it was really one punch that did it. They said, you know, it wasn't the culmination of, you know, the punishment that he took throughout the prior 13 rounds. He said it was one punch. And they said, well, the really amazing thing was, like, Mancini dropped him, like, 19 seconds into the fourth round. And basically, Tim was literally dead right there. But they said, as he was dying, he was still getting to his feet. They said, it was unbelievable with that. Then I read about, you know, his losses to Livingstone Bramble. And then I also read about the fight with the recently deceased Hector Camacho, a fight that I've contended for 23 years that Mancini won. And one thing they said in the book, and it made sense, because Ray was a 3-1 underdog going into that fight, if not even more. And the one, I guess, wise guy that was there talked to him afterwards and said, Ray, you couldn't win that decision, or Reno would have went bankrupt.
Yeah, it's Boom Boom was the same nickname as we had. We had a guy on a few weeks ago. One of our last guests had the same nickname, but he didn't get it from Boom Boom, the real Boom Boom.
Yeah. But, so I'm going to sit down and really start diving into that. But before we go on, I did just want to do a quick recap of what I had sent in an email earlier with some of our end of the year awards. And I can only really give a boxer's perspective on it. I really didn't watch a whole lot of MMA this year, you know, a few fights here and there. But I do have, let me pull up my email, you know, a couple categories. And like I said, we can debate the boxing side, then maybe you and Tom can debate the MMA side. You know, see how we can end 2012 on a bang. The categories I have are Fighter of the Year, Fight of the Year, Knockout of the Year, Upset of the Year, and Decision of the Year, and Trainer of the Year. So, for the Fighter of the Year in boxing, you had some really good candidates out there. You had Floyd Mayweather came back and beat Miguel Cotto with fight. You had a very impressive end of the year by Juan Manuel Marquez, knocking out Manny Pacquiao, his rival, Al Cole, with a single shot. But for fight, and believe me, that warrants a lot of consideration, but Fighter of the Year, I went with Andre Ward. You know, he took on Chad Dawson, once beaten world light heavyweight champion, and he dominated him. I mean, in the Marquez fight, you could, you know, single it down to Pacquiao got sloppy, Marquez landed a tremendous punch in a fight that he was literally losing. Andre Ward did not lose any of the fight with Chad Dawson. He battered him from pillar to post. He knocked him down three times and forced him to surrender. A guy that was a legitimate world champion in his previous fight beat a Hall of Famer in Bernard Hopkins. And Andre Ward made him look like an amateur. So Andre Ward gets my vote for Fighter of the Year. Would you guys like to chime in?
That's a pretty good choice. I would say that I haven't watched enough boxing to really pick a better choice, but I do think that Robert Guerrero should be up there. He's had an incredible comeback since he took some time off to deal with his wife's cancer, and now he's in discussions to be the next opponent for Floyd Mayweather. So he's definitely been making a name for himself and climbing up the ladder. And also Marquez, I mean, I would say that's definitely knockout of the year, if not fight of the year right there. I actually never saw it except for, reading the articles and stuff like that. And I'm not even sure I even was able to find a clip of the actual knockout video. So I've been missing the boat left and right on watching boxing this year. But I definitely did watch Guerrero's last fight, and I'm really impressed with his style and his ability to dictate that fight. And he only got tagged up a little bit at the end of his last fight there, so against Berto. So he's definitely going to be a good match for Mayweather, whether he can beat him or not. You know, who knows? But I definitely think he deserves some honorable mention, if not you know, top three fighters of the year there. Tom?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with Tony, and I think that we need we need a category of runner up, and I think Robert Guerrero was a great runner up for it as well, and Marquez. But I would go with Tony on that one, fighter of the year for sure.
The next one I had for...
Hey, whoa. We got to talk about MMA.
Okay,
okay, go ahead.
Okay, well...
Go ahead, Tom.
Okay, well, mine was, all things considered, I had to go with Ronda. I mean, she was such an impact. I mean, there were a lot of other possible contenders, but Ronda just single-handedly did something that Dana White said he would never do. So just based on that, I've got to go with her.
Well, you're not alone there, because I've seen some articles written this week across the MMA landscape that say the same thing. But if you had to pick a male and a female in that category, I would say that George St. Pierre or Anderson Silva, either one of those guys had incredible years. George coming back from injury and performing like that in the fight. And Anderson Silva just showing that he could just sit there and pretty much play air guitar in the center of the ring and still win a fight and let a guy punch him while he's standing against the cage and still win a fight.
But I think, you know what the problem is we expect it. These guys are so good that when they accomplish miracles, it's, oh, well, whatever. We expect it. And really, when you think about it, you know, I mean, what kind of attitude is that? But, yeah, I would agree.
But Ronda, I mean, yeah, you cannot beat the fact that she really opened up a new door for women in MMA, and having such little experience in the sport in general. I mean, she's had some Olympic experience in some of the, you know, disciplines that are involved, judo.
Yeah.
But going to that level in her first few fights and skyrocketing into fame, getting all the PR that she got, and breaking that females in the UFC barrier there is pretty damn impressive. So I don't think many would argue that even above any male in the sport, she's made a bigger difference this year than anybody else. All right, Tony, now you can go to the next category.
Okay, now I'll give this one. The fight of the year, 2012 fight of the year in the sport of boxing. Had some good ones, but the one that keeps sticking in my mind, it was one that I watched 2 weeks ago, which was a very good fight. And if it was a year that didn't have a super fight, I may have picked this one. It was a unanimous decision win from Alfredo Angulo, who had, you know, been away for about a year. He had one fight since his loss to James Kirkland last November, and that was a 56-second knockout. So he stepped in against a fighter by the name of Jorge Silva, and they just went to absolute war. They were just hitting each other with bombs. I mean, there was times Angulo would hit him after the bell would flush out. Did not put him down. And that would be my main runner-up. But to me, the fight of the year, 2012, was a fight that we just previously mentioned a short while ago, that being Robert Guerrero, and the fight that pretty much put him as a candidate for fighter of the year, which was his decision over Andre Berto. A good back-and-forth fight, and Guerrero proved himself to be a legitimate 147-pounder. Dished out a lot of punishment to Berto. It was a pretty good back-and-forth fight, which, wanted to see him in vaulting himself into the Floyd Mayweather suite. Mayweather, more than anybody else I've ever really seen. He bloodied his nose. Pushed him as almost to the limits that Oscar De La Hoya pushed him to in 2007. But for overall, I give it to Robert Guerrero and Andre Berto.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting because that's like one of the only fights I've watched belt to belt in recent weeks. But I was trying to do a little cheating here, looking up online what other people thought. Interesting, Boxing's Fight of the Year for 2012. And that's another one I did not see. I don't know if you thought about that one yet, Tony.
You faded out for a second. What was it?
Mike Alvarado versus Brandon Rios was actually...
Yeah, I did see that fight. And yes, that was a very good play. And that does consider, or does warrant consideration for Fight of the Year, if not runner-up. That was a very good action fight right there.
Let's see what the Google authorities say about 2012 MMA Fights of the Year. There you go. 2012 Fight of the Year from MMA Fighting. This is a weird one. Chan Sung Jung versus Dustin Poirier on UFC on Fuel 3. I don't remember that one.
Well, I would say that as far as significance, that ranked pretty good. But mine is, my favorite's a little lower on the list, and I've got to go with Shogun Hua and Brandon Vera. I mean, I know it wasn't a title fight. But when I try to judge something like that, I look at the ebb and flow, and I look at the heart of both guys, and I look at when both guys had very real possibilities of just throwing the towel in and quitting, and suddenly just coming back, just getting that insane burst of whatever you want to call it, and making a comeback. And I think that's my vote right there.
That's definitely a good choice right there. And I have watched a lot of MMA, but this one's tough for me because I have seen a lot of great fights.
Sure.
I would definitely have to agree there on that one, but I'm just trying to find out some information here. Round 4, which is on UFC on Fuel TV 3. Also, UFC, this is a list from Tapology.com. This is the top 10 from 2012. Number 2, Henderson from UFC 144. It was pretty decent fight. I think Henderson dominated a little bit at the key points, but that was a pretty epic fight. Joe Lauzon versus Jamie Varner is actually number 3 on here. That was on UFC on Fox 4. Jake Ellenberger versus Sanchez. I'm drawing a blank on what's the first name there. First name.
Diego.
Diego.
Yeah, Diego.
We also had Johnson versus McCall 1 at number 5. I would definitely not agree with that one. I didn't think that was that great. But the fight ended in a draw after 3 rounds on UFC on FX2. And Ronda Rousey versus Miesha Tate comes in at number 6. We had Miesha on our show not too long ago. And I would definitely agree that one should be up there. It was probably the longest anyone's lasted with Rousey for a little while, and I'm itching to see the rematch because I think Miesha's definitely not going to be as easy to get the armbar on the second time around,
go
especially
cupcake.
After suffering the kind of injury.
Go cupcake.
And Rua versus Vera is actually way down at number 7.
Whoa,
so
number 7? Oh, no.
Definitely made the list. So you're barking up the right tree, but it's a low limb. That one's on. Number 8, Barboza versus Etienne from UFC 142. That's not one I particularly remember. Martin Kampman versus Thiago Alves comes in at number 9. That was on UFC on FX2. And number 10, I would definitely agree that was in the top 10, St. Pierre versus Condit. It was a pretty decent fight and a pretty important milestone for a guy coming back from serious knee injury like that. So there you go. Sorry to take over that category. Tony, how about the next one?
Okay, the next one that I have would be, and this is, I know in boxing is going to be a unanimous choice, is the 2012 Knockout of the Year.
Marquez.
I don't know what that's going to be. I don't think there's any disputing on that. So let me get to some of the runner-ups. And the one that I actually was going to pick until December 8th happened was the fight that happened back in October between in fact, this guy actually had two impressive stoppage performances this year. Philadelphia's Danny Garcia. Danny had the knockout win over Amir Khan, which he battered him several times, stopping in the fourth. But the one that really caught my attention, and if you go back and watch this on the Showtime replays, it actually has a kind of a Keystone Cops moment in there, too, was his rematch with Eric Morales, who he first defeated for the world title back in March, or February, I'm sorry. They're fighting the rematch, and you can just tell Morales was a step slow, and he wasn't going the distance this time. And Garcia was peppering him pretty good with jabs and body shots, standing right in front of him, hitting him at will, and he staggered him pretty good at the end of the third, which if there was 10 more seconds, he probably wouldn't get out of the third. But about a minute or so into the fourth, he hit him with a counter hook, and Morales went down. And his body, literally the upper half of his body, landed on the ring apron. And once he landed on the ring apron, one of the ringside photographers was right there, turned about 6 inches, and just snuck a shot right in his face. That would have been my knockout of the year if Marquez or Pacquiao didn't love it.
Well, for MMA, we have several candidates. The top two that are coming up in on Google here are Kung Lee versus Rich Franklin from UFC Macau. I don't think anybody expected the fight to go that quickly. Kung Lee just used his punching power, believe it or not. A lot of people think he's better at his kicks and his Sanchu, but he's got some boxing behind him, too. And the other one was just mentioned on the MMA Fight of the Year list, Edson Barboza versus Terry Etim. It was a knockout TKO in round 3 from a spinning wheel kick by Edson Barboza. Knocked out Etim. So, and then another list from Tapology. We'll just do the top 3 since we're running out of time here. We got number 2, Aldo versus Mendez, and Pettis versus Lozon comes in at number 3, and both of those were first round knockouts. One, Aldo's was UFC 142, Pettis was UFC 144. And Lozon, we've had him on the show, I think, before.
Yeah.
And I've seen him a bunch of times at Massachusetts MMA events, so I'm always rooting for him, and I always hate to see him lose, so that was one of those ones where I was cringing. He doesn't lose by knockout very often either. It's usually decision or something. So there you have it there. What's next?
Well,
I'm Tom wanted to weigh in. Tom want to weigh in on knockout of the year?
I will.
Go ahead, Tom.
I will. Real quick on that one. I know I'm kind of in the minority, obviously, from what you said about the rankings, but when it comes to coming from behind and scoring the KO, to me that's knockout of the year, and I think Tim Bosch against Mushin Okami. What an incredible comeback. I mean, the guy had been beat up bad for 2 rounds, came back and stopped him in the third. So, I mean, it wasn't as spectacular as a real fancy kick, but I always look at submissions or knockout as a big eraser, and the kind of thing that you can lose every minute of every round until the last minute. And I think that boxing and MMA are the only two sports that that happens. And so I'm going with Tim Boach on that.
All right.
Okay.
All right, Tony.
I'm going to lump the next two together for me in the boxing field. I'm going to say the upset of the year and the bad decision of the year are here. Timothy Bradley's win over Manny Pacquiao. I don't think anybody saw that coming. Now, granted, I thought Pacquiao won 11 of the 12 rounds, but the fact of the matter is when you look in the record book, it is going to say win for Timothy Bradley, but it also is probably one of the worst decisions I've ever seen.
Agreed.
Yeah, definitely. Those two are slant. For MMA, I don't know. Those are really tough ones for me. We've seen a lot of.
I can go, and this is all. It's given me a lot of dilemma about who I'm calling to win Saturday night, because Tim Boach, every time I've underestimated the guy, he surprised me. Hector Lombard's coming into the UFC fighting Tim Boach. I don't know what the odds were for the fight, but I mean, Hector Lombard had to be the overwhelming favorite, and look what happened. So to me, fortunately, we're out of time, and I don't have to give my predictions for Saturday night and put my nickname on the line again.
I don't know, but what was the bad decision for the year in MMA, because there's so many of them.
Just
quickly, UFC 155 this weekend, Junior Dos Santos versus Cain Velasquez in the headlining fight, Jim Miller versus Joe Lauzon, Tim Boach versus Konstantinos Filippou, Yushin Okami versus Alan Belcher, Chris Lieben versus Derek Brunson, Brad Pickett versus Eddie Wineland, Eric Perez versus Byron Bloodworth, Melvin Guiard versus Jamie Varner, Michael Johnson versus Miles Jury, Todd Duffy versus Philip John Moraga versus Chris Carriasco, Max Holloway versus Lenny Garcia. That's it. That's all we got time for. And until next week, thanks for stopping by.
Happy New Year, and we'll talk to you in 2013.
That sounds good, guys. Happy New Year. Let's enjoy the fights, all right?
All right.